This is episode 3 of Cutie. In the previous episodes, we discovered the stories of patients with chronic UTI and what barriers within our culture and within the healthcare system have got in their way to them being diagnosed and treated. In this episode, we'll reintroduce all the patients we've heard from: Anna, Lily, Caroline, Martha, and Carolyn. Some listeners may find the content of this episode upsetting, as it acts as a window into the complicated world of living with chronic pain that is all too often overlooked for women.
A lot of people don't really understand the pain associated with UTI. I've had 2 children. I would take childbirth over UTI.
There are so many things that set off my pain and can make it a lot worse.
We look at the hidden problem of QT in children.
We were getting contacted by so many parents.
And we ask, who are the women building and fighting for this community and women's health?
I didn't think I was that sort of person, actually, but I will bang a drum.
What does it mean to be so sick in a world where no one believes you?
Sometimes it does just feel totally random. So you've got all of these things in place to make sure that you don't flare. And then you can be doing really well. You can be not going out to all the events that your friends are going to. You can be eating super clean, super healthy, nothing acidic, and you can still be hit with the most terrible flare.
Flaring is an increase or return of your lower urinary tract symptoms. So that could be pain, frequency, blood in the urine, tiredness, and nausea. Depending on the patient, the symptoms vary, as can the things that trigger these flares.
I've had nights before where I've been up all night, like, crying in pain and, like, beating myself up for eating an apple because I'm like, did I have too much sugar in it? Is that why this has happened?
Some people flare after eating certain foods that irritate the bladder, after drinking alcohol, after sex, or during periods of stress or physical exertion, which means the lives of the people with this illness tend to shrink. They have to be on constant alert and make choices about what they can and can't do.
I kind of act as if I don't have it a lot of the time. I've just been away for a weekend hiking and camping and drinking for 3 days. And, like, it's caused really bad consequences for me. And, like, I shouldn't do it, but I've done the other stuff, I think, because I've had so many years of this. I've had periods where I've really isolated myself and really, you know, stopped doing all that stuff. And the depression was just so hard to deal with that I've kind of gone the other direction now. But then that has more physical implications for me.
Even beyond trying to avoid a flare, side effects from antibiotics can cause bad thrush, nausea, exhaustion, and sometimes socialising isn't really an option.
I'm trying my hardest to be what I would be without this, but it's really hard. It's there, and I think about it probably 75% of the time, so...
I wanted to understand more about what was going on when people with QT flare, or what exactly was causing their pain more generally.
Your bladder's always inflamed, and the problem is your bladder's in your pelvis. It's sitting on your pelvic floor muscles.
Dr. Raj is the lead clinician at the Chronic UTI Clinic at the Whittington Hospital. We met her in the previous episode.
The response to pelvic floor muscles of an inflamed organ sitting on top of them is tension. And it's that muscular tension which then causes even more pain.
On really, really good days, I can forget about it for hours at a time, and that's brilliant. But I'm always, always aware. There's always a feeling of discomfort there. There's always something that's not quite right.
So not only do you have pain in that organ, you now have pain in the muscles trying to protect that organ. And that leads to other issues. You can't pee properly. The muscles are too tense. It hurts when you have sex. It hurts when you sit down. It hurts when you walk.
You get so used to the pain and so used to being sick, sometimes it's hard to tell if a flare is coming.
And then what happens is that because there's so many nerves going down into that region, those nerves become hyper-alert. They're always on standby. It then takes very little to even push you even more over the edge.
I, like, think about, like, the inside of my bladder just, like, being on fire.
That's really interesting. I've never thought about how I would visualise it. I think it's red. I think, yeah, I picture it as an angry red colour.
Or in my case, I feel like I'm sitting on a wasp's nest, or I'm sitting in a bowl of acid.
Almost like swarming ants or something. That's kind of how it feels, like ants that are really outnumbered, whatever it is they're like going to town on.
But this is a deep internal discomfort.
That connection between the brain and the pelvis is now all messed up and scrambled. That's then called neuropathic pain. Neuropathic pain is typically described as like cutting glass, burning.
To the point that it's hard to walk, it's hard to stand. The kind of pain, like how could you possibly sleep? How could you possibly... Your body's so alert, you're sweating from the pain.
When the pain gets so intense, it can cause a lot of nausea as well.
It's often associated with other symptoms like sweating, nausea, dizziness.
I went on like that for days until my mum just put her foot down and was like, we are going to A&E.
You started with one pain, which is pain in the organ. You've ended up with three pains. Pain in the organ, pain in the pelvic floor, pain from the nerves. So you can see how it can all go terribly wrong.
There's such a fine line to understanding what is just your illness and then when you're pushed into the danger zone of when you could be having sepsis or a kidney infection.
As uncomfortable as this is to sit with, I think it's important to home in on this experience. Hearing and understanding a patient's symptoms is currently the only way we can really identify QT, as tests have been proven ineffective. All too often, we look away from or don't really hear the experiences of women in pain. By brushing pain aside over and over again, we teach young women that their pain is natural, normal, despite what their bodies are telling them.
I remember, I think I must have been 17 or 18. I'd never really needed the doctors for much in my life, actually, until this point. And I thought, this has been so bad. I've never been more debilitated. I expected the GP to ring me to ask if I was okay. I thought it was such a serious infection, my first acute UTI. I thought, the GP will understand this. And they didn't ring. But you know what? I think back to that and that sort of initial understanding, that initial experience of UTI, I took it so seriously because I was so seriously unwell. Maybe it should be treated like that.
This is Elaine, and she's the only person we've not introduced yet. Her story is not just about her own experience with QT, but also her five-year-old daughter Lily's.
I couldn't believe that I also developed a chronic infection at the same time that my daughter was suffering with one.
Like many women with chronic UTIs, children are being misdiagnosed and told they don't have a chronic infection for years. Except the difference is, once they do find out, there's nowhere for them to get treatment.
She was so unwell, so desperately unwell, and it was just terrifying for me because there really isn't anywhere to turn.
About 2 or 3 years ago, chronic UTI campaign group QTIC were being contacted by more and more parents whose children were struggling with UTIs that wouldn't go away.
We currently are supporting between 300 and 400 sets of parents whose children are struggling.
This is Carolyn from QTIC. We met her in the previous episode.
The children are not able to be treated by the chronic UTI specialists. Lower urinary tract symptom, the Lutz Clinic at the Whittington, can't treat anyone under the age of 18 for protocol reasons. Other private UTI, chronic UTI specialists are not able to treat children under the age of 16. So we have where children are struggling with symptoms, they're unable to get diagnosis and are unable to get treatment.
Every time I looked at her, she was just sitting uncomfortably during the day. It's affected her education. I actually had to pull her out of nursery completely because, you know, if she did go into nursery, how many accidents was she going to have? How many pains was she going to have? Maybe she'd get told off because of the misunderstanding that, you know, this is a child in pain with a serious infection that isn't clearing.
It can be more difficult to tell if a child has a UTI because the symptoms can be vague and young children can't easily communicate how they feel. There are even some reports of families of children who suffer, who've been referred to social services, because of the misconceptions surrounding UTIs and the fact that doctors and paediatricians don't have any training, appropriate tests or guidelines for the illness. When it comes to antibiotic treatments, which is currently the mainstay of QT treatment, there is a lot of work to be done to make sure children can access them safely.
Adults are old enough to say, I understand you're prescribing this off recommendations and I accept that risk and I accept that I will tell you if I have side effects. But doing that to a child needs a cautious approach. And I think to put a child on long-term antibiotics is something that needs considerable thought and they'd have to be monitored incredibly carefully.
As a parent, you have to become the specialist that the child can't access and try and just try and get them to the right place medically and get their health back to where it was at the beginning.
The majority of these children suffering, their mothers also suffer. We know there is a genetic link that causes possibly an immune deficiency, but we don't know enough about it. There is research going on in this, but it's so at its in its infancy.
Honestly, my daughter saved me. If I hadn't come out of the other side of the maze already and found out what was wrong with my daughter, I would have gone through it myself. And I wish I was. I wish I'd been the one that suffered and I knew for her. And I honestly, I think that this is why this is so important. We need better public awareness so that people can go, oh, this is exactly what I've got. This is my story right there on the NHS website.
Raising awareness of QT will help children as well as women. For people with QT, navigating that maze alone and dealing with an illness that can't be seen or isn't yet understood is extremely complicated.
I think you learn a lot about your own resilience. But then on the other hand, I also feel really dismissive of people who don't. Like if someone complains to me about a hangover, I want to spit at them. If someone's like, God, bank holiday weekend, oh, I'm so tired and poor, I'm like, I hate you. Like, that's a real...
That's me.
No, it's not you specifically.
I mean, it's literally everyone.
It is, that's the thing, it is everyone.
How does QT, or having an invisible chronic illness, affect your relationships, friendships, and your sense of self?
People around you become so used to you being poorly that when you say you're really poorly, it's kind of like, okay.
Imagine, like, for example, someone's in a relationship, two healthy people are in a relationship, and one of them turns around and goes, oh my God, I am in excruciating pain. I'm in a personal hell. You'd go, oh my God, I'm so sorry. What's happening? But then imagine that someone has said that to you for like the 15th time that day and has been saying it that many times per day for 3 years. It really loses its meaning, which is really hard.
I'm desensitized to it. I'm used to it. I've had this for... This has been my life since I was a mid-teenager, you know? And like I said, because I'm so conscious of not wanting it to define me, I kind of act as if I don't have it.
Yeah, it's really, really lonely having an invisible illness.
It feels so inexplicably wrong to be in the house as much as I am. It often feels like I'm trapped in like a fishbowl and I can see everybody else starting their careers and starting their life. And I just have to be witness to it and I can't get involved.
I can make myself feel bad about what's happening to me so easily. I think particularly navigating a relationship for this other person to step up and have to be so involved in it, I feel really guilty and I don't know where to draw the line between how much help should this person be giving me, but equally, I need the help, so I don't know what to do.
I had to give up a job I absolutely loved. Oh, I enjoyed it so much. I spoke to parents, so I spoke to the teachers. It was a fantastic environment to work in, and I had to give it up. And that's been really hard, actually, giving up that job. I still quite haven't got it out of my system.
I definitely had to go through a process of grieving for who I was before and who I am now. And it's really hard to kind of come to terms with who you are without those things. Trying to make yourself understand that you're still worth something without those things.
I think the impact of not being believed is often thought of in a physical health way. The impact of not being believed means that the infection doesn't get treated, which means you get sicker. But something that I think is not discussed enough is the psychological impact of fighting with doctors in multiple rooms for years and years and years and being told that you're lying. I ended up being diagnosed with PTSD because I couldn't leave the house without crying. I felt so unsafe because I believed that nobody in the world could help me. And even in the chronic UTI community, my symptoms were so different from everybody else's. And the stress of feeling like you're the only person that can help yourself is just monumental.
It hurts so much to feel like you are living in a world that doesn't care. It's so lonely. It just goes to show the impact of not believing the patient that's in front of you. And I can't talk about it without crying. The illness of QT is horrific. And we deserve the research and we deserve to be heard. And we being all women, all people, deserve to be listened to and to be believed.
You know, there's a lot of movement and a lot of hope. You know, I started doing my PhD in 2008. And if I think about how much progress has been made, probably in the last 3 to 5 years, that's all been driven by the patients.
Finding friends within the QT community has been such a lifeline. It's utterly invaluable. I can't believe that there was a time where I didn't have the girls to speak to. I am forever grateful for their existence.
I think the patient groups in the UTI sphere are phenomenal. And the people that run the groups, I don't know how they do it. They are so available for patients. They do a wonderful job, remarkable.
Our QTIC website is intended for the sufferer. We've ticked off quite a few of the things on our aims and objectives. Our next thing is to get, one day, every doctor in the country says, I know what this is, it's a chronic UTI, and to get more chronic UTI specialists.
And I think what's also helped is advocacy in other women's health fields, so endometriosis, menopause, and lifting that profile that women's health needs to be funded and we need to listen to women.
I didn't think I was that sort of person, actually, but, you know, I will bang a drum because it needs to be said. Anything we can do, this is our community, someone's listening.
At the heart of all these stories is the deep-rooted attitude that minimises, explains away or simply dismisses women's pain. The experiences of QT are mirrored in the struggles of those who've spoken up about endometriosis, PMS, mesh to menopause.
51% of our population is women and it's something that we just weren't talking about.
Women are in chronic pain and they are not being given the help they deserve.
Thanks to all the women that shared their stories and expertise for this series. The art for QT was by Edie Medley. And you can find her comic, It Burns, all about her own experience with QT via her Instagram, linked in the description. This podcast is powered by Transmission Roundhouse.